This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Joyce Goh and Melissa Idris. It's the 5th of July and a Thursday, and we're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning with a range of interviews, news and analysis.
So usually in the past week or so, every time I come to the office, I can hear laughter and cheering from the nearby mama from the football matches overnight. But today it was all quiet and I realized, oh, there was no match overnight.
So for some, this is a good thing.
This is a good thing. Catch up on sleep, is it?
It is. But, you know, the World Cup yields no end of controversy. In fact, there's one raging on social media in China today. And it's got to do with yet another journalist covering the World Cup who's getting, well, in quotes, harassed by a fan. But instead of a woman journalist, it's a man journalist. And the harasser is not a man, but a woman. So the question is, is this a similar situation or is it...
Joyce, why did he use air quotes for harass? Harassment is harassment law. Yeah, why do you use air quotes? True.
Well, in this case, right, he's being kissed by a female fan during a World Cup. And now this whole conversation has come up, whether or not is it sexual harassment. And a debate has emerged on Weibo. This is China's largest social networking site. And they're asking, you know, on the actions of this some Russian female fans, why are they not being criticized in the same way as their male counterparts when a guy comes out and kisses or hugs a female journalist while she was
trying to do live reporting.
Yeah, live reporting.
I mean,
yeah.
we've seen cases of that, especially during the World Cup. You know, women reporters doing a live cross and then some guy on a dare, supposedly comes in and tries to kiss her or gropes her or does something to embarrass her and kind of makes her lose attention. This situation has been flipped. But the funny thing is the social media response has been mixed. So rather than outrage, some people are saying, and I assume this is sarcastically phrased or with a sarcastic tone or to be read in a sarcastic tone. Why is this, if it's a good-looking person kissing, then it's not sexual harassment.
Yeah. Well, I think we shouldn't be surprised, right? Partly because...
We shouldn't?
Well, this is it, right? Because when it comes to gender relations, it's asymmetrical. I mean, it's not that men and women are treated equally at least in understanding these kinds of scenarios. Because typically, when we look at serious instances or undeniable instances of sexual harassment, the perpetrator is almost always male, right? And so when it's flipped around, then there's a bit more room for laughter or kind of letting it go or seeing this as something that needs to be put in context. Well, but when a man does it, it's often read in terms of the larger picture.
Remember the Terry Crews issue with 50 Cent where he came out and he said that he was a victim of sexual harassment and 50 Cent said, well, why didn't you just beat the person up? And, you know, again...
Yeah, precisely, right? And so, again, because men are seen as stronger and much more in control, though in that instance, the perpetrator was also male, right? So it was a male who, I think he was an agent, a talent agent, who took advantage of the situation and groped Terry Crews. But in both instances, I mean, you know, the idea is that men can defend themselves, whereas women are defenseless. And you might either take that as a sexist statement, or you might take that as a...
be one thing, Sharad, or it could be maybe males. I mean, we have a lot of cases where males are the perpetrators.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's exactly what I said.
Women
now, right?
Are not. They don't go.
Absolutely. That's exactly my point, right? I just said that.
No, but
is that in most instances,
you said that men can defend themselves. Women are defenseless. That's why.
No, I'm just saying that's the expectation,
the view, right?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But maybe in this, what I'm saying is that maybe from what we've seen, our men are the one who has a. We have a number of cases where men has harassed. I mean, they've been the ones doing the harassing, right? Maybe there are no women out there who's done the harassing. I don't know, but there are no cases of that.
Or maybe men don't come out and say it for fear of shame or, again, you know.
Because the expectation is that they can defend themselves.
Or maybe it is the case exactly like this World Cup issue with the reporter that, you know, it seemed to be, if a woman takes or shows it or does, I don't know the term, shows affection or has, you know, makes advances. That's the term I'm looking for.
Makes advances towards me.
It's welcome. It's seen to be welcome, right? Especially we've seen how the social media response has been for this case.
So this is why controversy rages, even though there were no games last night. Also, a quick update on the boys are lost in that tie cave. They're no longer lost, but the question is how to get them out. It's a bit of a tricky situation.
Don't they have to learn how to dive?
They might have to. It might be months before they could get them out. But good thing is that there are three basic conditions for survival that's all met. The temperatures are at 26 degrees, so it's not too cold. And they have enough water. You're stuck in a cave.
Yeah, for
months. But they're saying that there's water, drinkable water, and there's sufficient oxygen. Because remember, there were some concerns earlier whether or not there will be enough oxygen and all that.
So yeah, but waters might rise because they're only the start of the rainy season. We'll be back with a look at people who want to escape the World Cup. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh. We continue to look at the World Cup. But just a quick note, that was Otis Redding with a Mr. Pitiful. So, okay, so Mr. in the television frame.
He's not pitiful.
Yeah. But well, you might take pity on him. He's trying to do a job, and the job requires to have a straight face and tell a story to the camera. And then you have all these people on a dare wanting to be in the frame. What would you do if you were that? I believe he was a Korean, journalist at the Russian World Cup
MBN, games. The networking in South Korea. He was covering the story as we mentioned earlier. So what happened essentially was this woman kissed him while he was doing the live cross, and then he continued on with his job, essentially
like a trooper.
And then someone else, another fan, came up to him seconds after the first on-air kiss. And this second fan, a woman as well, gave him another pack on the cheek.
All right. Let's just clarify. They're not fans of the journalists. They're fans of football.
World Cup.
World Cup fans. Thank you for pointing that out.
Okay. So what would you do?
Can you imagine someone came up and I think clearly just, you know, for the 15 seconds of fame, as a reporter, do you stop and kind of tell that person off? Do you continue on like nothing is happening? Do you remember the BBC Skype call of that man when his daughter came into the room and he continued on like nothing happened? It would have been so much better if he said, oh, my daughter's in the room and picked her up or something. But the fact that he just pretended like there was no world going on behind him was bizarre.
Okay, but in that instance, he's not really the professional. He's the expert giving
guest. I believe the presenter of that show actually pointed out to him and said, oh, I think your daughter just came into the room, which I thought was endearing.
Yeah, it was. Okay, tell us what you think and what you would do in that situation. If you can imagine yourself as a professional journalist, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. So that's the way to contact us and be part of this conversation. Now, coming back to the World Cup, they're not not everybody is on the same page when it comes to the excitement that the World Cup generates. And in an article in the Star, very cheekily, they suggest six destinations you can travel to escape World Cup fever. That includes Pangkalawat.
I kind of like the way they framed it because they said, no, if you're not much of a football fan, chances are you'd rather catch the flu than the World Cup fever. And what happens when the World Cup is on? So how do you go escaping the crowds and the all this football chatter? So they've recommended places where perhaps there's no satellite reception, there's no phone coverage, so you escape the World Cup.
But you still can get phone coverage in Bangkok, I believe.
I've never been.
Okay. Yeah, you can.
But I guess it's not exactly that secluded.
But I don't know, is World Cup really eating into your lives? I mean, is it so much of a in-your-face kind of thing?
Yes, it can be, and it depends on the crowd you're in. And I actually have a better solution than, you know, spending good money on, you know, expensive resorts in faraway places. I would suggest pretending to be part
pretending?
Of the crowd.
Pretending?
While inside, you really just hate it. And, you know, and you can make fun of the idiocy that goes on with people who are fans. So, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's the way. You pretend. So it's a very complicated thing, but it's cheaper.
So when I asked you who you were supporting, you said Senegal when they had already dropped out. You were pretending. Actually, I don't know.
You pretend to be part of the conversation. That's what I do. Okay. All my life, I've pretended to be
part of the
conversation.
Is that your job? Part of, I thought part of the conversation, you know, to carry a conversation. That's what you do professionally.
Yes, I do. But I also.
And he's a professional conversationalist.
Yes, he is.
What about actually learning the sport? Learning the rules and all that.
To be honest, I do like football. I like it in small doses, but I do like football. And I do, but in particular, like the World Cup because it's a global game and all kinds of interesting side phenomena comes out and the stories that come out. So, and I love, you know, the underdog story. So, I don't know. Japan's out as well now. So I'm scratching my head to find a team I want to support going forward.
Sure, no more underdogs for you, Sharad.
Well, no, there's always an underdog.
There's always an underdog.
You know? And there's a brilliant documentary on the one time that North Korea made it into the World Cup. And it's an extraordinary story of the underdog, right? So I'm going to find a link to that and tweet it out for you.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't think you should mess with World Cup fans because if you're not a World Cup fan, you're going around telling people that, I think football is silly or I don't really like it. I saw a story on BBC that Colombians have been urged to stay calm after two players who missed penalties against England in the World Cup match, I think it was last night, right? They've received death threats.
Whoa. They take the game very seriously.
It could have been last night. It would have been two nights ago, I guess.
Two nights ago. No, I believe it was...
Yeah,
two nights ago.
I had to
check with a football fan, but it was two nights ago.
Yes, but that's how serious football can get and how dangerously serious it can get. But coming back to the idea of being in a crowd, not being on the same page, should you run away physically or can you run away into yourself? I think that's the conundrum that we're posing this morning. But as you ponder that, we'll take a short break. We'll be back. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Bad Company with Can't Get Enough. I'm Sharad Kutan and I'm with some really good company.
Oh, I knew you'd say that.
Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh pointing out that I'm very predictable, especially this early in the morning. Okay, you can be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. That threatened to go off the rails there. Now, somebody who's continuing to make small waves in this instance, despite being inducted into cabinet, being a full minister, one of the youngest ministers we've ever had is Syed Saddiq Syed Abdul Rahman. But he wants to be known as Saddiq or Bro.
Or Bro Saddiq. So he's urging his staff to address him not as Yang Berhormat or YB, but rather as Bro Saddiq. So good morning, bro. Good morning, bro.
Bro Homat. Young Bro Homat.
Young Bro Homat. I love that, Sharad. You are quite witty in the morning.
Except I'm not particularly original because that was actually a title of a podcast that's available on BFM.
Okay. All right then. Okay. So plagiarizing also in the morning, right? Okay. So the thing is, we're not hating on Syed Saddiq. Okay. I understand it looks like we've been talking about Syed Saddiq a lot.
I love this move, by the way.
Of what?
Calling people bro.
Yeah.
It's really, I guess, to look at whether this is the right thing to do. There was a lot of discussion on social media about whether or not ministers should be so casual with their staff, whether this kind of familiarity is appropriate or suitable for if people want to show respect to the office.
Do you think also because, I don't know, for me, I feel in his way, I guess, it's just saying that, you know, just... It's okay to call him whatever he wants to be called. At the end of the day, it's just to look at what he can do and what he will be doing, whether or not he's going to walk the talk and basically look at what his work is. We're still waiting. Early days, he just took office. But yeah, do you think being casual with the minister or be it your boss, would that jeopardize how work is done?
Well, you know, I think, well, you take what is the default mode. The default mode is not just formalities, right? Mm-hmm. The respect for formalities, but in fact, an overabundance of formalities and protocol and bowing and scraping that's become so much part of or is a symptom of this culture of sycophancy that we have, right? So people sucking up to people, you know, in authority,
right.
And you know, so they laid on thick with the Young Bahormat, Young Ahmad Bahormat, and YB and Dato. Have you ever been in a social situation where everybody at the table has a title like Dato and they just refer to each other as Dato? It's like they don't have names anymore. They're just Dato.
Maybe that is the name.
Dato. Remember when I think Anthony Lok, when he first took office, he also mentioned to his staff, you know, you don't have to wait outside and line up to greet him anymore, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he said that because it's a waste of time.
Yeah, so he said, can we not, you guys don't have to wait out there to greet me. So they're all lining up outside at the lobby.
Look, I'm all for doing away with this kind of feudal culture, right? I think it's great that we want to become more egalitarian, like remove all these formalities. But I do think there is something to be said about respect for the office.
Yeah, but respect for the office does not have to come in this form. So if you look at the article that we'll tweet out, the story goes beyond this issue of what to call him. He says what's important in his office is for his officers not to be taken in by people claiming an association with him or with his deputy. Coming and say, well, I'm actually a friend of Bro Sadiq, or I'm a friend of Stephen, the deputy, and you know, and therefore trying to get favors. For him, that is much more important. That's substantial, not this bowing and scraping.
Right.
And you know, I actually prefer, though, and as a matter of course, I do ask the people I speak to on, you know, in interviews and grill, I ask them, how would you like to be addressed? And when they suggest something informal, we have often been criticized for that informality. Why did you call them professor? Why did you call them by their first name? And it's because it was, in fact, the desire of that person to be called in that informal manner. But there is this expectation that we all, you know, bow and scrape in the face of these titles.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So now, but it goes beyond just the titles, right? So it goes beyond the Bro Sadiq. He now also wants, you know, his staff to go jogging with him. So
okay, that's oppressive. That's oppressive.
Why?
Don't you think that is even better? Because he's actually trying to show, look, he's one of the guys. He is one of us, right? There's no difference between him and his staff and, you know, being a minister. He just wants to be one of the guys.
And I think it's great to foster teamwork, you know, to go out together or to hang out together.
Why did you
in
this say
case,
it was oppressive?
To jog because you have to jog, is it?
because you see, the truth of the matter, at the end of the day, he does assign your paychecks, right? So when he says something like, when he wants to affect familiarity and says, well, come, let's just go for a jog, there is pressure, in fact, to go for the jog even if you don't want to. So he shouldn't be putting his subordinates in that
it's
situation.
The jog. I don't know. I think it's, because in a way, he's with the youth and sports. He is the youth.
He's
and
supposed
sports.
To be
not the health minister. Thank you very much. And I think I would park jogging under health.
So he's saying that he wants to instill in all Malaysians the spirit of sportsmanship.
Okay, so does this go all the way up? Should we be looking to break all this down? You know, no longer calling the highest title of the land and call them the first name. With the first names?
You know, there are countries in the world where people who take high office drive a simple cars, cycle to work. Remember that meme that went out when Jomo Kwame Sundaram, a member of the Council of Eminent Persons, was seen on the LRT?
Yeah.
It's like, no, he should be in a chauffeur-driven car. Why do we have those expectations? They're not there in many parts of the world. I think it's a good thing. Thank you so much, Sadiq, for starting this conversation. And you can be part of it too. Remember, you can tweet us or WhatsApp us. Now, taking us to the first bulletin of the morning, Sly and the Family Stone with Everyday People. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Sin Kane with How We Be. I'm Sherrod Kutin, and we be good, apparently. We be good.
Ooh, slang.
We be good. Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh with you this morning. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock with a range of interviews and news and analysis. It is the 5th of July and just 42 minutes after 6 in the morning. Now, of course, yesterday was a big day for Najib Razak. In fact, for the nation, and eyes were focused on all kinds of things, including the conduct of the Attorney General's office and the Attorney General in particular. He, of course, was subject to a disruptive protest when he tried to conduct a press conference with supporters of the former Prime Minister chanting various things. and one of them being the calling on the Attorney General to speak in the Malay language, because reopen that debate about the question of the issue of the national language.
Yeah, so this has gone to the social media realm. I mean, there are people who are asking, you know, what is the issue here? Because is it wrong for the AG who he didn't speak Malay in his press conference? Is that wrong? And of course, some people feel that because Malay is the national language, he should at least be fluent in it because he's already at such a high level in a public office. But then again, you know, it's a press conference and there are international press there as well.
Okay, so this where I differ with the gender setting that's going on with protesters and with some media, which is to distract us from the real issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the people who are protesting would have shouted down the Attorney General regardless, because they are not there as advocates of the national language. They're there as supporters of the former Prime Minister. And what was their intention? One assumes it was, in fact, to cast aspersions on the judicial process, which the Attorney General, of course, is central.
Well, yeah, you're right. It was also it's to disrupt, right? So and it worked because, you know, because the chanting was so loud. So we yesterday were waiting anxiously for Tommy Thomas, for the Attorney General to come and give his press conference. The world media was waiting. And when he finally did emerge and he was poised at the mic, the shouting got so loud, the chanting got so loud that they had to cancel it and they had to move to another location.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked in disrupting the information that Tommy Thomas was supposed to give the media.
And on top of that, you know, by spinning off the story about how this is about the national language, because if you note, the national language advocates of the past don't necessarily conduct themselves in a thuggish fashion, right? This conversation is a false one, because it what it does is it takes us away from the fact that what's at stake here is, you know, an exploration as to an ecosystem of corruption that this trial is trying to expose.
I have to say, I've seen some people on social media call that out. So, you know, some people don't see through that.
Do
see through the deflection. I also want to point out that press conferences are not meant for supporters. They're meant for the press, mm-hmm. right? So by chanting and disrupting this process, you're actually disturbing someone who's trying to carry out the job, their jobs. And what happened was, I know colleagues of peers of ours at Malaysia Kini and all who got hurt in that you know scuffle yesterday. So really, all they did was just create a nuisance for themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all about, I mean, the job for journalists is to make sure we get the right information out there. I mean, there's just so many questions. I mean, the public, we were also waiting in the studio, waiting around to figure out what was the news, what's the information to put out there. And if for him to delay the press conference...
I also point that Shafi'i spoke in English?
Yes.
Right, Shafi'i, Najib's lawyer, spoke in English.
Yes.
Didn't know anyone say anything about that?
So again, we come back to the opportunism is using a larger issue like the centrality of the national language, but to push a very particular agenda, in this case, you know, casting a doubt on the judicial process, saying that, you know, and I think Shafi'i came out to say, and he was reported saying that they expect a hostility from the public prosecutor's office and so on and so forth. Now, you know, what do you make of those advocates of free speech who say that those protesters have a right to be there to
be
heard?
I do agree with that. I just want to clarify a little bit. So while Shafi'i is fluent in English and did speak a little bit in English, he also did conduct most of his press conference in Malay. The advocates of free speech will say, well, they have a right to be there. Absolutely, they have a right to be there. I thought, to be fair, the authorities at the High Court did a really good job in keeping the peace. So there was a lot of order in, you know, mm-hmm. to the point where some journalists were not even allowed to get in because everyone was screened so tightly.
But you really think that
they should be there?
They have a right to be disruptive.
Not disruptive. They have a right to peaceful assembly. They have a right to be there. But the fact that we're disruptive is up to the authorities to keep the order.
I think they have a right to be there. But if it's a press conference, it should just be with the media. And with who is conducting the press.
So then you're saying they don't have a right to be there.
At the press conference, No, because it's supposed to be for the media and with whoever that's conducting the press conference. But outside the press conference room or the area, yeah, they can go and support. Because it's a big area, the whole court building is big. But when they're conducting a press conference, I think it should just be the media and whoever that's conducting it so that the information will flow.
That's why I think they learned that very quickly yesterday and then found a new location.
Okay, tell us what you think. Tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us. We'll be back. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.